Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. You can learn more at schoolspiritvending.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
In today's show, I interview Dr. Alan Pratt, who is the executive director of the National Rural Education Association, the NREA. He's going to talk about what he learned about PLCs in a rural area through his dissertation, the biggest challenges rural schools face, how systems help you succeed, and what Teddy Roosevelt teaches us about servant leadership. I don't take for granted that you listen. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Dr. Alan Pratt has served as a high school science teacher and coach, a high school principal, assistant superintendent, curriculum director, executive director of the Tennessee Rural Education Association, executive director of the East Tennessee Center of Regional Excellence for the Tennessee Department of Education, and rural outreach liaison for Lincoln Memorial University. His primary interests are those issues which impact rural schools and the role of instructional leaders at the district and building levels. He is also involved at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga School of Education and Educational Leadership. Thanks again for joining me on the show, Alan Pratt.
Hey, thanks for having me. Honored and can't wait to talk a little about leadership today.
Absolutely. So before we started recording, you tell me you did a dissertation in professional learning communities, and that's kind of how we got connected, because I give that away, right? The blueprint for school success. And
exactly.
A huge part of that's professional learning communities. So can you share a little bit about what you learned through your dissertation?
You know, one of the things that drove me, I was a principal at the time, so I wanted to put professional learning communities in my school. And when I started looking at the research, there was really not anything on high school PLCs and how they interact and how they work. And that kind of drove my work to find a rural high school with enough diversity and enough, I guess, being remote enough to be classified as a rural school district that is highly engaged in professional learning communities. And I found one that had 5 years of professional learning community, so it gave me an opportunity to really dig in and study what works well with teacher leadership, principal leadership, and then their teams and how they interact with each other.
What were some of the key takeaways you found there in terms of working well and the challenges?
I studied English teachers because they had four distinct groups and four grade levels or age levels. And one of them, I think, the higher up the food chain during that grade process, they didn't mind it as much. I think the freshman teachers felt like it was a mandated ultimatum on them. And then as we went up the chain, they felt better about the process. But it's like anything, usually freshman level is the toughest level teacher-wise and students. So, and they had larger numbers.
What inspired you to get in a career and pursue a career in education?
My mom was an educator, and that was kind of the main motivation to kind of follow in her footsteps. And she never taught in public school. She had a degree, but it's kind of, I felt like I needed to carry on where she may not have started. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. So she had a big impact on your life.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Were there some character traits or some ideas about education that you really learned from her?
I think being a servant leader and not being a, out front, you're a servant leader. You're serving the people that work for you. And I think that was the biggest thing in her life. And it also carried over to when I became a leader of a school, I realized quickly that I need to be out front when things are tough, but I need to put them out front when things are very good and let them reap the benefits of our work.
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge, I think, for all leaders. But that's the thing. You make the people the hero, right?
Yep.
And if things are going bad, you got to take on the role of the villain and just take the blame. So that it's not easy, right? But that's what we sign up for.
Yeah.
So that's part of, I think, servant leadership. Are there any examples or anecdotes or definitions in terms of the Alan Pratt way of looking at servant leadership?
I'm a big historian, so I like history. I like to study presidents. And my favorite is Teddy Roosevelt. So Teddy was a pretty rough character sometimes, but he also knew his passions and what he believed in. And he had a guiding principles that he lived by in life. And I think as a leader, that's kind of what I want to be. And I think Teddy saw into the future and realized we needed to save certain things and fight for certain areas of our country. And I think as a leader, we can't always see a month ahead. We need to see a year or two ahead to kind of show, to help guide to that vision and where we want to be as a school.
Yeah, I love that vision idea. Do you have any exercises or how you develop that muscle? Because tell you the truth, right, as a principal, even as an AP, sometimes it's really easy to just survive day to day.
You're right. So,
and then you said not even a month ahead, but we're talking years ahead.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
You know, it's not easy, number one. I think when we look at how we're going to lead and what we're going to do, I think you have to have that clear mission, vision, your values. You have to create those with your team and your school. And I think you have to really stick to those. And I'll tell you, every time I made a mistake as a leader or I didn't do something the right way, it's because I got away from what we believe in. And I think that's the most vital piece. If we're all going the same direction and I know the purpose of what we're doing, then I think we're better off. I mean, we're driving the same direction. I think when schools, especially rural schools, a lot of times leaders are there because they may be the next person in line to take the job, or they might be the only person that wants the job in a rural community. But they're not guided, or they don't have a plan of action to make things better. And it's kind of like you said, I think it's just, let's just get by, let's just survive the day, survive the year, get to graduation and move on. And that's not the way to be to help our students.
So, Alan, you know, you're a part of the National Rural Education Association, and you're also a faculty over at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. How did you make that jump from, educator, principal, and now the positions you hold currently?
I actually was a principal, and then I went to work for our Department of Ed in Tennessee. So I transitioned to a leadership role that we served like a service center to serve districts. And then I went back to a rural district as assistant superintendent. Always been involved in rural education, and this opportunity came up, and I wrote a proposal, and I got an interview, and we moved to Chattanooga with the office, and getting my doctorate obviously helped that process as well, but it's been a good transition. And sometimes you need a change, and I needed a change from the K-12 world and battling some of those battles to a different level. And it's been nice. It's been a good transition for me.
What's been the best part of it?
I think the hardest part and the best part is the schedule flexibility is different. You know, when you're in a school system, you're locked in. You know, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
I'm not locked in as much, and I've been traveling some, so I go to different states, and I'll be in Montana in February. I go to D.C., Montana, Pennsylvania, New York. So there's a lot of good travel parts, and there's a lot of good rural areas I get to go visit. And I'll be honest with you, it's so much fun to see rural areas that are not nearby. And it's so neat to see how they interact and how they play school. It's pretty neat. It's a neat process.
And then as part of that to, further research or do you try to steal ideas, best practices, and then bring that back to Tennessee or how does that work?
Yeah, and we'll do that when we look at universities and we'll steal ideas for our university. But a lot of it is just it's promotion and advocacy work of, hey, we're out to promote rural schools. We're out to promote what's going well in rural schools. And I think that's the biggest part for what we're trying to do today.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. I like the flexibility within the schedule and getting to see a lot of different model rural areas.
Yeah, it's very nice.
In your professional opinion, what are some of the biggest challenges that rural schools and school districts face nowadays?
I think our teacher pool, our teacher candidates, retention and hiring teachers. You know, the district I worked in here where I still live today, we've not had a physics. We've had one physics teacher for three high schools for 10 years. You can't find, it's the teachers in those high needs area. You look at STEM, we can't do everything we need to do in STEM education because we don't have the teaching, the teacher or the, I guess, the candidate pool to pull from. And, as a principal in a rural area, when I lost a chemistry teacher, it was going to be a big deal to find another chemistry teacher to move to a rural area, possibly take less money and to help our students. And, they talk about, Betsy DeVos in her Senate confirmation hearing a couple weeks ago, last week, she talked about distance education and school choice, but using like video or it doesn't always work when you're talking about higher level subjects. It's hard to Skype in for a lesson sometimes on some of those more stringent courses.
Yeah, even, thinking about Skyping in on a lab, right? And lab safety and those kind of things. You're talking about science specifically.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's impossible, but I wonder what that would look like. So that's some of the biggest challenges, teacher retention, especially in the STEM area. Have you seen districts handling it well? And if so, what are they doing?
I'm going to go back to this point again. I think they have a good plan of how they're going to keep their teachers. It's not all about money necessarily. It's about that family environment and trying to keep them in their school system. You know, some things in South Carolina, I've traveled to South Carolina, you know, they're doing teacher, basically loan forgiveness to attract teachers to those rural areas. They're also doing a housing plan, or like a, I guess it would be the best thing would be called like a, it's not really a loan, but it's a basically a loan aid program to get teachers to move to those rural areas and commit to being in those rural areas. Tennessee's looking at doing some things like that. So those areas, those states, those communities that are actually address it with kind of outside the box means of ways to pull people in, because it's not always about money. Money's a factor, obviously, but you know, it's feeling like they belong to something that's more important, and kind of being a vital part of that school community.
Ellen, how would you describe your leadership style, and how'd you develop it? I know we talked a little bit about servant leadership, but what else would you like to add to that?
I think it's, to me, it's more of a, when they talk about the process, it's a collaborative process, and it's a team collaborative process where, there's going to be one person in charge that's going to make call, but there are also going to be situations where they have to do things as a team, and that team is going to help guide and lead that school. It's like we talked about earlier, when things are really tough, you have to make that call, and it's not always fun, but that's your job. But, you know, as you're leading a school, you have to build leaders and build for the next leader to come behind you. And I think that comes from your building. And if you can create teacher leaders that take ownership in their building, that's the best situation. And it's not about me doing it, it's about we doing it. And I think the we is the biggest factor.
What do you do to those leaders? You know, that's part of this podcast, right? And some of the masterminds are run that kind of stuff. So I know what I do, but let me learn from you. I want to steal some tips.
I don't know if you'd steal it. I probably stole a lot from everyone else as well. That's, you know, in education, we steal everything from each other pretty much, right? That's the best thing to do.
You got to hustle. You got to be crafty.
Yeah, you got to hustle. Yeah. So, you know, I think you have to put people in roles where their strengths lie. Number one. And I think you have to put them on teams that they match strengths and weaknesses, and you allow them to grow and give them room to make mistakes, but make them feel a part of the process. And I'll tell you, as a principal, some of the biggest mistakes I made when I put too much on one or two people, when they were my go-to people. And you can wear them out. And I think spreading that around to kind of pull everyone in is vital.
Yeah, that's something. It's so easy to wear out your folks. And one thing that I've heard, you know, Schoolman now, there's a handful of teachers that are known for serving our SPED population at a very high level. And that's fantastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm concerned that they'll get burnt out because each year they're given that extra challenge. It's doable, but honestly, everybody should be able to serve that community at a high level.
You're right.
So that's one of those things, you know, and it's the tension of leadership, because do you know that you go with this person because they're going to hit a home run every time? Or do you go with this person, you're a little less sure that they maybe right now have the capacity. Can we build it? Yes, you know? So that's what we go through, right?
Well, I think you're right. You hit a good point. I know if I give it to this person, it's going to be done. But maybe the other person is waiting for me to show some a glimpse of confidence in them that I could make them a better person. And I don't realize it all the time. And I should cut myself short as a leader. And I certainly cut them short as a potential leader.
Yeah. So give them the opportunities to grow, right?
Yeah. I think that's major. Yeah.
Zone of proximal development, make them a little uncomfortable, but watch them grow into the role.
Very true. Very true.
So, Alan, as a leader, you said, you know, we get to take the shots when things go wrong. And I love asking this question. What is your worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
It was too many initiatives too fast. I mean, and that was I tried to put too much on my folks too fast, and I bombarded them with information. And I learned quickly that you need to have your plan, but if you're going to change and have an initiative, focus on one big area at a time. Make sure you're doing that well, and then move forward. I've actually run teachers off. I had teachers that said, I can't handle the pace. This is too much. And that's my fault. I didn't do a good job. Matter of fact, when I see those folks, they at first time I saw them, they thought I would be mad at them. And I apologized the first time I saw them, because I realized that I did you wrong. I was not a good person. And they go, what do you mean not a good person? Was not the right leader at that time. I'm a better person now and a better leader. And we all could go back and do things differently. I wouldn't do it differently now because I've grown so much from the mistake, you know, and that's the positive.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the hard part, right? Those mistakes really form us.
Yeah.
But man, they hurt when you're going through it.
Yeah. And you get your feelings hurt easily too.
Yeah. Yeah, sure do.
As a principal, I know one of the biggest challenges that I face is figuring out how to raise more money for my school so I can impact my students and help them get the resources, the programs that they desperately need. That's where School Spirit Vending comes in. And I know the owner, Matt Miller. He's an excellent guy. He was a guest on episode 5. And I'm encouraging you, the listener, to check out School Spirit Vending in their hassle-free year-round fundraising program at schoolspiritvending.com.
Quick question with, you know, you can answer this as you were a principal or even now. I'm fascinated too. I'm just curious, what does the first hour of your day look like? And do you by any chance have any type of morning routine or ritual?
Okay, so I'm ADHD and major OCD. So I have a ritual. If I don't have a ritual, it messes my day up. You got what I'm saying?
Gotcha. Yep.
So as a principal, I'll kind of do it both ways. As a principal, I'm an early riser. So I'm a 4:30 in the morning, try to get the office as early as possible. I got to have my certain cup of coffee and my certain setup, and then I'm good to go.
What's the coffee?
It just depends. It goes by season. So
okay.
Right now I'm a French vanilla kind of guy. It doesn't matter where it's from, but that's the flavor I'm into right now.
All right.
Yeah. So, and then in the rural area, we don't do Starbucks that much. We don't have it. So, no, I'm just kidding about that. We kind of do. But anyway, my big thing is I have a to-do list that I usually start the day before that I know I'm going to knock things out before 9 o'clock. And I set reminders on my computer, and then I have a paper pencil. So I hard copy in computer about everything. And then I try to get all of my little busy work stuff that's I know it's going to drive me crazy finished by 9 o'clock. Now, as a principal, I would try to finish it by 7:30.
Wow.
Because I knew by 7:30, I'm not going to knock that list out. So, and I mean, that's just how I didn't do it every day, but most of the time, that's how I did it. And I got in the habit of doing that because I work on my dissertation from like 4:35 in the morning to 8. So I got in that habit of doing something really quickly and early, and it kind of, I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it probably gives you some energy and excitement, momentum, right? Moving toward the remainder of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're marking things off your list. So, you know, being OCD, if I don't have knocked my list out, I'm going to not have a great day. And then I feel like when I come home, I don't need to do the list at home. You know, I need to be with my family. You know, and that's the key for me and spending time. And it may be just sitting in a room with them while they're doing something, but that's time to be together and me not knocking a list off. So that's kind of one of the trade-offs.
So what did you do to establish that boundary? And was it always that way, or did you have to learn something to get there?
When I became a leader, I realized quickly I needed to have some kind of chart or some kind of system to knock off what I needed to do, or I'm going to miss appointments or miss what I need to that's really important. And I'm a template form guy. I like to make my own and do all that stuff. And I'm still not finalized or have the best one that I need. We all probably go to the grave trying to finalize a template that I like. But that's just kind of what I do. If I don't have it, then I mean, it's in my bag. It goes with me. I have to have it with me. So if I'm traveling, I've got my little note list ready to go. That's what works for me.
How'd you decide what goes on that list and prioritize it?
It's a good question. And it's changed over the years because I used to be everything I'd put on there, and it became a massive list and became a book. So basically, these are items I'd have to get finished on this day, and I have to knock them out. And if I can do a top five, that's what I try to get to, a top five. And I've also realized that if I knock those five out, it's an accomplishment. It's a win.
Yeah, I like that too. I'm flirting with the idea. We read a book called The 12-Week Year with my mastermind groups.
Yep.
And the ideas aren't necessarily complex. It's in the discipline. It's in the execution. And the members in the mastermind just went bananas, you know, over the book. And there's a spreadsheet my friend developed to help track your goals. And there's this idea of creating an ideal week and what you should be focused on for blocks of time. So I'm flirting with an idea of creating a workshop, you know, to serve the listeners. But that's, you know, it gets me fired up. I love hearing about people's routines and systems. For you, like the top five, because I know if you identify those, you prioritize those goals and you X them off, right? Other big things start to happen. And the beauty of the 12-week year and the spreadsheet we got, and you establish that goal, you track it Monday through, you could do Sunday if you want, but Monday through Friday for me, and it converts it because of Excel into a percentage. And it's cool because, you know, you see yourself climbing and it keeps you motivated, right?
That's a good idea. Yeah, I like it.
It's fantastic. So, yeah, maybe you'll join me on the webinar if I do a workshop or something like that. But
yeah, that would be good. I'd like to see it. Yes, sir.
I'll definitely tell the listeners if it gets developed. Hey, so Alan, knowing what you know now with all your experience, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
Slow down. You're not going to change your school in 2 weeks or 6 months. Read as much information as possible on what you're wanting to do. If you're wanting to do professional learning communities, visit, read, study everything you possibly can. But also, I think I didn't go visit enough places. And I think you have to go see models in action to see the good, the bad, and the ugly with those models. And I think that is kind of what you need to do as a I would want to tell myself. Also, I would go back and change to really support the culture of my building, not necessarily the instructional piece, which is vital, but the culture is going to trump all of that. If your culture is terrible, you're going to make some progression, but you're never going to soar the way you want to unless your culture is where it needs to be.
Alan, what is one class we should add to all our schools that isn't currently taught that you know of?
I'm going to answer it two different ways. Number one, not a singular class. I think we need to teach or we need to work in the alignment to workforce jobs in middle school to high school and start that process where students in fifth and sixth grade can know, especially in rural areas, hey, it's okay to go into manufacturing jobs. And if I go this route, I can take this, get college credentials, and have a job when I'm 19 or 20 years old. So I think us not undervaluing CTE programs and undervaluing the thing that all students don't have to go to a four-year school. You know, and I think that's the key. And I think that's how we bring back rural communities. If we don't align it to jobs, we're going to go away. And I think that's the biggest stress point. So it wouldn't be one subject area. It would be kind of that opening that mindset. Because in Tennessee, in 2009, we adopted the American Diploma Project, and it's shifted and kind of changed a little bit. But basically, we took our track program. We had different diplomas, and we went to one track. Four-year degree was the best option. It doesn't meet all the needs of all of our students. So I know I didn't answer your question, but that's how I would change it if I could.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just programmatic, and I think that's good, just having that workforce opportunity pipeline starting at a younger age. And what you're saying, too, is you're looking at the community in front of you. You don't have limiting beliefs because you're still pushing them to go to college if that's the track that they're on. But you're also saying, hey, for this kid over here, they might want to get into business early. They might have a drive to work and start providing, and yep. What are we doing to support that? So you're just giving your kids, you know, what they need. And I think that's really important. When you think of the word leader, who's the first person that comes to mind?
I'll go back to Teddy Roosevelt's my guy. I mean, that's the guy that, you know, I look at leader, that's who I look for. I mean, I just think he is, and I like the national park system. I like being out west. I like that aspect of it. So he fits into that well. He actually, I want to say first, early in his presidency, how he took over, he came to Chattanooga. So I like to track that documented evidence of him coming to our area. It's pretty neat. And like to talk about stories about Teddy Roosevelt as well. So
very cool. I love it. I don't know too much about him except what I learned in high school, but he seemed like he was quite a character.
Yeah, he was a character. Yes, sir.
What's the worst leadership advice you've been given or have heard being given?
Don't rock the boat. Keep it the same way and just get by.
Concerning school leadership, what have you changed your mind about in the past few years?
I think it goes to the point of being more flexible and understanding of other people's views and the lens they look at the world through. And I'm going to tell you, that's the biggest thing. If I could go back as a principal, I would have discipline in my building, but it wouldn't be the same type of discipline in my building. Because I think the students that we deal with in rural communities that are poor, low socioeconomic, they come to school to eat. A lot of times that's their place to get a meal, and they come for a safe environment. And us making that environment the best possible place would be the change in my leadership style and getting to know my students on a more personal level. Because as a principal, we always kind of get away from them because you only deal with students getting in trouble. And that's not always a good place to be.
How would you shift that mindset, I think, for the faculty, too? Because, you know, you get it. You've been through the battles and you see a different need for how we discipline kids. But I haven't found a faculty ready and willing and open to that yet. I mean, they can get there, right? Through leadership, through education through discussions. I think it takes a lot of honest and open discussions. I don't mean to be answering my own question, but
no, you're right. You're right. You're dead on. I mean, it takes a lot of time. I think it goes back to culture. I think it's the culture you build in your building that helps change that mindset. And I think we're so caught up in looking at how we move numbers and how we score on state tests and national scores on ACT or whatever you're taking. I think putting a name with that those numbers is a vital part of that as well. I think that's one advantage of a rural community, because sometimes we're smaller communities, so we know the students a little bit better than larger schools. And I think it helps in that process.
How do you want to be remembered as a leader?
That's a good question. I think as a leader that did what's right for the students and did what's right for the building and did not change because of pressure. Meaning if we made a decision that was right for students, we were going to do it what's right for students no matter what and not kind of fall into the political pressure lines.
Alan, according to you, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
School Culture Rewired. It lays out exactly what you need to look for in your building, how to change your school culture, and how to set it up to be on that pathway to success. School Culture Rewired. Actually, I do classes. I teach ed leadership classes at UTC, and one of my new classes is School Culture. And that's the book I pulled from. That's the book I read. I found the book about a year and a half ago, and I read it on a plane, on a flight, about a four-hour flight, and I read the entire book. And it broke it down, and I said, this is the Bible, and this book changed my life in a lot of ways. And School Culture Rewired is a good, solid read. It's an easy read, and it's what every leader needs to read and go through the process.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not familiar with the first author, Steve Grunert. I could be pronouncing that wrong, but I know Todd Whitaker for sure.
Todd Whitaker is the guy, the main. Todd is, I got to meet him once, and he signed a copy for me of my book, so he gets it. And they get it in writing the book. And it's practical. I think that's the key.
Alan, what do you like to do for fun?
My house is built in 1918. So I have an older home. So I like to kind of play around fixing things up on my home and kind of finishing rooms and refinishing furniture and stuff like that. So that's kind of my getaway.
That's cool. Are you working on a project right now?
We're actually finishing up a project in our laundry room, and then we're going to start two more projects pretty soon. So we'll redo a bathroom and redo part of our kitchen. So coming up soon.
So the too many initiatives at home doesn't apply, huh?
Well, there's only one person driving the too many initiatives. It's me. So
no, that's funny. Alan, if you could be automatically good at something right away, what would it be?
In life or in education?
Take it however you want.
I think automatically good at something would be that's a good one. I believe a better listener and not a person that's going to reply to your first comment that you make to me. So I think listening, but better listener that might show a little bit more compassion. Not that I don't, but my ADHD level kind of leads me to kind of move quickly on people's comments, and that's not always a good thing to do.
What message would you put on all school marquees if you could do that for one day?
We meet the needs of all students, all, period. And not a score or percentage, we just meet their needs.
That's good, yeah, because unpacking that, you know, you mentioned this a little earlier in the interview, and of course, academic performance and student achievement is important, but you got to have multiple modes and measures of defining success at your school. And it can't just be test scores and grades. The kids need a lot. And so what is your school doing to provide for the whole child? So, Alan, you made it to the last question. I'm proud of you. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
My dream school would be a mixture of a brick and mortar and a non-brick and mortar building, meaning so we would have options to educate children from any 24 hours, 7 days a week, any blended learning, any mode possible to meet their needs with a direct alignment to workforce needs and career and post-secondary education results. Now, I would never build a high school that was just 9-12. I'd always do a 5-12 and on the same campus so we could start that process early and move them in the direction. I have the ability for students to take, when I say this, to be able to do like college where you can knock out a lot of your core subjects early and have a lot more time your junior and senior year for college discovery and or internships. And pretty much a device or some kind of aspect for every child, and make sure we met the needs of every student we possibly could, and take as many students as we possibly could in to help them out, even if that meant boarding or whatever we needed to do.
I like that. Well, Ellen, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
You can go to our website at www.nrea.net. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me. You have all my contact information, my email is on there. And, you know, the biggest thing is our motto is if you feel like you're a rural community, you're a rural community. So come be a part of what we're doing at NREA.
Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Alan. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Alan in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up where you get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Alan, thank you so much for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Hey, thank you a lot. Appreciate it. Pleasure.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.